This is the Peter B. Collins Show from Green 960 San Francisco. Find out more about Peter B. at green960.com.
Once again, stuck in the middle with you. This is the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm not Peter B. Collins. I'm Brad Friedman. Coming at you live from Los Angeles, the studios of KTLK AM 1150. We'll blame them. No, it's not their fault. I don't know whose fault it is. We're a little bit late coming on the air, but we are here. We will be here for the next 3 hours. And I, your friendly citizen investigative blogger for bradblog.com, will be sitting in all week for Peter B., except for Wednesday. Peter is in the Buckeye State. He's in Ohio. That is his form of a vacation, I guess. Actually, he's got some family there. He'll be joining us on Wednesday, giving me a break. We got a big show ahead for you. Coming up this hour, David Sirota, author of The Uprising, is going to be joining us, and we're going to be giving away a signed copy of his book, The Uprising, to some lucky caller or another. And you can get in that queue if you like at 888-5-PETER-B. We got Katrina Rill up in San Francisco engineering the show today, fighting off the technical demons that follow me anywhere that I go. So God love you, Katrina. And maybe she'll answer your call if you give her a shout at 888-5-PETER-B to talk to David Sirota. Where's my list there, Desiree? Do you remember the list of the phone numbers? We can't find it. All right. Well, we'll get caught up with that in a second. Also joining us today, Taylor Marsh, internet blogger, radio personality, and Hillary Clinton supporter at one time. She'll be joining us, as will Larry Johnson, also a Hillary Clinton supporter, former CIA analyst, classmate of Valerie Plame Wilson. He is not going to be listening, I don't think, to Hillary Clinton and her concession speech asking folks, her supporters, to support Obama. He's got different plans. We're going to hear about those. Taylor, on the other hand, I think is going with Obama, following Hillary Clinton's wishes. So we're going to talk about that concession speech over the weekend. We will also have a green news update from our own Desi Doyen later today. John Gideon will give us a daily voting news update. And Michael Osterlink of the American Conservative Defense Alliance will join us. He wants to talk to me about true conservatism and the fact that he is joining with a bunch of other folks in a transpartisan alliance for a national call-in day tomorrow to Congress, calling on Congress to not attack Iraq, but rather find a new defense, a new diplomatic policy with Iran. That's nice. Iran? Okay. She's already corrected me. Desi's correcting me. It's Iran. We'll see how many times I do that today. So we got a big show ahead for you today. We'll see if our lines hold up here from K-Talk in Los Angeles. This just comes across my desk before I headed over to the studio. John Conyers is inviting Scotty McClellan to testify before the U.S. House Judiciary Committee. Very short press release here today. House Judiciary Committee Chair John Conyers invited former White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan to testify before the committee at a June 20th hearing about reported efforts to cover up the role of the White House in the Valerie Plame leak, as described in his book, What Happened Inside the Bush White House and Washington's Culture of Deception. I have, quote, I have extended an invitation to Mr. McClellan to testify before the Judiciary Committee after discussions between committee staffs and his attorneys, said Conyers. In his book, Mr. McClellan suggests that senior White House officials may have obstructed justice and engaged in a cover-up regarding the Valerie Plame leak. Yes, they may have obstructed justice. This alleged activity, Conyers goes on to say, could well extend beyond the scope of the offenses for which Scooter Libby has been convicted and deserves further attention. I'll say it does. Whether he'll be able to give it the proper attention and whether he's able to do anything about it. Or let me put that differently. Whether he chooses to do anything about it is a different matter entirely. We, of course, welcome your thoughts on this over at the bradblog.com chat room. which I believe our good friendly hostess, I put quotes around the word friendly, our friendly hostess, Agent 99, is there in the open thread in the chat room. I'm going to try to keep my eyes on that as best I can throughout the day because we would love your feedback. A GOP bloodbath alert. Cook Political Report flips their ratings for 10 House races at once in the direction of the Democrats, as Eric Kleefeld reported at TPM. He says, this is really something, this was late last week, this is really something. We already knew that House Dems are expected to rack up major victories this fall, but this latest development is really eye-opening, says Kleefeld. The Cook Political Report, whose ratings of congressional races are well-respected by political pros, has just changed its rating on 10 House races and has changed them all in favor of the Dems. It's very rare that Cook flips so many ratings at once, says Kleefeld, much less flipping them all in the favor of the same political party. According to Cook's ratings, Republicans now occupy 21 out of 27 seats in the, quote, toss-up category, painting a very stark picture of GOP vulnerability. Of course, for those folks who know me from bradblog.com, they know that I spend a lot of our time reporting on problems with our electoral system. Last week, we reported that two viruses were found on an electronic voting tabulator down in Pinellas County, Florida. As well, we've seen within the last week or two, several elections flipped in Arkansas. In New Mexico, the entire e-voting registration computer crashed on Election Day. And, of course, my own votes were flipped here in Los Angeles. At our state primary, was that last Tuesday? Last Tuesday. Seems weeks ago. Last Tuesday, my own votes, 4 out of the 12 that I cast, were actually flipped before my very eyes on the voting machine made by ESNS. Screwing up elections from coast to coast. We're going to be talking more about that this week. I bring it up because I mentioned with this GOP bloodbath alert, when I covered it over to Bradblog, I added, what could possibly go wrong? Well, just about everything. And I would warn those who think the Democrats are a lock for this November to think again, to pay attention. The horse race is interesting. It is fun. But if you don't watch the track conditions, I promise you, anything can and probably will happen. So we're going to talk about all of that throughout the day. Got a lot more news here. Oh, yeah, Fox anchor called Obama's fist pound with his wife a terrorist fist jab. Lovely. Do I have time for this before I go out? Yeah, let me try this real quick. Media Matters reports that Fox News' E.D. Hill referred to the Barack Obama fist pound as a, quote, terrorist fist jab. During Friday's edition of America's Pulse on the Fox News channel, Edie Hill teased an upcoming discussion by saying, a fist bump, a pound, a terrorist fist jab, the gesture everyone seems to interpret differently. Of course, she went on to talk about what that meant with a body language expert. They never mentioned terrorist fist jab again. They just thought they'd drop that in to make everyone crazy and scared to death of that secret time-traveling Muslim, Barack Obama. Okay, we're going to come back with David Sirota in just a few short minutes. Glad you could join us here. I'm Brad Friedman on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Are you interested in saving thousands of dollars on your medical expenses? You can travel abroad with OneWorldHealthcare.org to a top-class medical center and get quality care for a fraction of the cost. Savings of up to 75% are realistic. OneWorldHealthcare.org.
Brad Friedman sitting in for Peter B. Collins here. Going to have David Sirota on momentarily with you. We just got news that Scott McClellan has, in fact, accepted that invitation I mentioned prior to the break. Accepted the invitation, as we expected he would, to speak to the House U.S. House Judiciary Committee about the Valerie Plame affair. That will be June 20th. I can only hope they schedule it in the afternoon because waking up at 6 a.m. out here out west is a pain. But anyway, that's going to be some must-see TV. We will remember to speak to Larry Johnson about that in our next hour, as he is a friend and former classmate of Valerie Plame. All right, let's jump to our first guest here, David Sirota, the author of The Uprising, an unauthorized tour of the populist revolt scaring Wall Street and Washington. He's a weekly columnist. His column can be found in, among other places, the Denver Post, San Francisco Chronicle, and Seattle Times. He is on a book tour right now, promoting The Uprising just about everywhere, and a bunch of the PBC affiliates up in San Francisco, Portland, etc. He has dates scheduled. We will give those to you shortly, and maybe we will give to one lucky caller a signed copy of The Uprising. David Sirota, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, Brad. Thanks for having me.
What the hell is The Uprising, David?
Well, The Uprising is the state between pure disengagement, pure disengaged chaos, and a full-fledged social movement. And I think it's a momentary upsurge in anger and in outrage and in really a backlash to the status quo and the establishment. And I think that we're at a time in our country right now where there really is this uprising, this upsurge on both the right and left. And what comes out of it is what I explore in my book. You know, where is this rage and anger being channeled? And I go from the California-Mexican border with the Minutemen to the studios of Lou Dobbs to union organizers in Seattle to third parties in New York and Connecticut. And I basically take in this book, I take the reader for a little bit of a journey across the country looking at how this uprising is taking shape.
These movements that you're seeing, is this unique in our history, I know you had mentioned actually on the Colbert Show, you had mentioned that America has a history of these sorts of uprisings. Is this a different movement than we have seen in the past 10, 20, 50 years? Where do we have to go back to see movements like this sprouting up around the country, or have they always been doing this?
Well, I think there have been three uprising moments, really intense uprising moments in the last 100 years. I think you saw one right during the Great Depression, right around the 1932 election. You saw one in the midst of the Civil Rights and anti-Vietnam War uprising in the 1964 election. And you saw one at the end of the 1970s during the Middle East energy and recessionary crisis that Ronald Reagan and the conservative organizers took that uprising and channeled it into a full-fledged conservative movement. So I think we're at a similar time, the fourth uprising of the last 100 or so years. And I think that that all the factors that were in those uprisings of the past are in those uprisings today. We have a national security crisis, an economic crisis, an energy crisis. And I think that that what comes out of it, again, it's not clear whether what comes out of this is going to be a conservative, a new kind of conservative movement, or a reinvigorated progressive movement. I tend to think it will be more progressive, but populism can go in both directions.
So is this just a matter, David, of who wins out in these uprisings, which ones ultimately catch on and change the direction of our country? How do we determine the winner, so to speak, since you've got conservatives and progressive movements emerging like this?
Well, I think you can see who the outlines of who's winning this battle, because this is a battle to channel the uprising into one direction or the other. I think you can see that. I think progressives in some senses have a leg up. That's both because of things out of their control and things in their control. Out of their control, you know, the public understands that there's a direct line between conservative policies and the current crises that we're living through. There's a direct line between the deregulatory agenda of Ronald Reagan, Bill Clinton, and George W. Bush, and the Enron disaster, and the housing crisis disaster, and now the credit crisis disaster. And I think that gives progressives a leg up. What also gives progressives a leg up, I think, is their success in organizing and using new technology like the internet to start organizing.
For a second. You talked a little bit about the progressive movements that you detail in your book, The Uprising. Then there are these conservative movements, and I know you spent time down there with the Minutemen and others. The immigration movement overall, is that considered one of these uprising movements you're seeing?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that the anti-immigrant uprising is certainly a powerful force, and it's certainly a force rooted in this backlash. I think that the conservatives who are participating in the Minutemen and in the anti-immigrant movement are motivated in many cases from some of the same impulses that progressives are motivated from on different issues. They're motivated out of a feeling that the government is not serving their interests, that the government is taking orders from corporate America, which of course corporate America wants this immigration situation to continue where we have an unfair trade policy that creates a economic race to the bottom between American and Mexican workers, and where Mexican workers are feel economically compelled to come over the southern border looking for jobs. I think that is a situation that corporate America enjoys because it drives down wages on both sides of the border.
Well, they do, but, you know, here's my thinking about some of these movements. It seems to me that a lot of them, particularly the immigration movement, I would argue it's a phony issue. It's been created by the Republicans. It's was seen perhaps a miscalculation, but I think that it was seen as an election issue. And, you know, I wonder if a lot of these groups really are less uprising and more astroturf, if you know what I mean, that these, are these groups that you follow, do you believe them all to be legitimate grassroots movements that sprung up this way, or was this a matter of, some of these political parties putting in money to try to come up with a new electoral issue in any
Well, I think as it relates to the immigration issue, I think that the Minutemen are truly a grassroots uprising. I don't think they're a front group. I certainly think there are front groups that amplify the anti-immigrant message as a political tool. But I think that the Minutemen really are an authentic uprising on the right, and I think that they actually make the Republican Party uncomfortable because the Republican Party is really the party of big money. And as I said, the Minutemen, I think, though I completely disagree with their prescriptions, I think that they are motivated in part out of a sense that the government is taking orders from big money. So. And let me also add that I certainly think that other uprisings that I describe in the book are much bigger, are much have much bigger membership, and that the Minutemen, I think, are representative of a wider spread anger in the country among people who feel, whether on the immigration issue or other issues, that things are completely out of control, that the government has stopped enforcing basic laws. And I think that sentiment really can metastasize in a number of either negative directions or positive directions.
How do these movements, once they get started, and you referred to like the Reagan Revolution and so forth, at what point do they move from uprising to actually realized moment or movement? Is it when you get the election of a Ronald Reagan or perhaps a Barack Obama if he jumps into some of these movements? How do we know when it goes from movement to reality, so to speak?
Right. It's a good question. I don't think there's any definitive moment, but I certainly think that that you'll start seeing real successes, real concrete successes. You'll start seeing bills passed in state legislatures. You'll start seeing a candidate's campaign on the issues of the of whatever social movement springs up. I mean, this is what happened in the civil rights movement, for instance. You had, before there was ever civil rights laws at the federal level, you know, there was a civil rights movement that, that went from a civil rights uprising to a civil rights movement that started challenging state and local Jim Crow laws. And you had candidates who were starting to embrace at the state and local level themes of the civil rights movement. And so that is, I think, at that moment, that's when you start seeing a slow transformation of a momentary uprising into a more fully functioning, fully developed social movement.
So you, it's really the politicians who find these movements and plant their flags, I think, in front of them. I think rarely do they actually bring the movement themselves, the politicians. It's the people. It's always the people. How did you come to know Ariana, or did she reach out to you?
I got to know her through Robert Greenwald, who I'm doing an event with tonight in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
Robert introduced me to her, and then she asked me to be part of her site. And, wow, what a success it's been, huh?
Yeah, kind of a surprise, actually, because back in the early days, I thought, oh, this is never going to fly. But now it's absolutely huge. Would that be considered an uprising?
I certainly think it's an interesting and innovative use of technology for the progressive uprising. I don't know if it's an uprising unto itself, but certainly something that's contributing to the progressive uprising.
And in just this last minute or two here, how does technology, and forgive me if you mentioned it in the first hour, first part of the hour, I missed it, how does technology feed into these uprisings, and could it be possible at this day and age without the kind of technology we have?
Well, I think the Netroots and the blogosphere aren't its own uprising or its own social movement. I think that the Netroots and the blogosphere and the Internet can be the connective tissue for all of these uprisings. That they can bring people together and let them self-organize. And I think as we move forward with social networking sites and social networking technology, that's going to become even more powerful.
Mm. Well, thank you very much for putting up with us today, David. More information at davidsirota.com. And since we were not able to give away the book so far because of the technical difficulties, as I say, that means I get to pimp out your book all week until we finally do give it away, David.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks. Have fun tonight. Enjoy Brave New Worlds and the book tour around the world. 2 big hours ahead. You're not going to want to miss it. Stay tuned.
This is the Peter B. Collins Show from Green 960 San Francisco. Find out more about Peter B. at green960.com.